We turn you over to the Dr. Futures live on KSCO Santa Cruz. Have a terrific Tuesday.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Dr. Futures Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Dr. Future.
Hey, folks, welcome back.
Welcome back to you.
Yeah, welcome to us. We're back. Doctor's Future. This time.
We're here to doctor the future. We're doing the best we can.
Oh, I thought you got a doctorate as well. A doctor and the futurist. Okay. Well, thanks, Josh, for the intro. Good to see you. And we will now begin the future.
Okay. Here and now.
Yeah. First of all, let's give you a little recap. We have been out of town for 3 weeks. We're up in Quebec, Montreal area, and Laurentians.
Despite the rumors that we were in Mars. No. Didn't happen.
Yeah. Checking out potential sites for Elon's new space colony.
That's right. After they nuke Mars to get an atmosphere, then.
Jeez, it's hard to decide when you have a whole planet.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
And there's, sadly, there's no beachfront property.
Well, and the whole thing is you're not going to be living on Mars. You're going to be living on a spaceship like the Starship Enterprise.
That's where it seems to be going.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to live in space than it is to live on a planet.
Well, at the moment.
Unless you have a body that's suitable for the planet like we do.
Yeah. Well, right, once they master space, it'll be easy to set some of those self-contained living habitats down on a planet.
Yes.
But mastering space is the tricky part.
Exactly, yeah. By the way, that's one of the great things about Canada is that because it's so cold in the winter, everyone knows how to live indoors really well.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have really insulated houses.
Right.
That allow you to do that. So they're close to spaceships, practically.
In Canada.
Yeah. And also the whole underground of Montreal connects miles of stores underground.
Oh, can you ride
your
bike?
So you don't even have to get out. Yeah, it's like...
Mm-hmm. No. You didn't even
you can ride your bike. No, I haven't seen too many bikes underground in Montreal. It's a good idea, though.
Okay.
I need bike lanes.
That would be a good place for... Lanes. No, it wouldn't. I was going to say those solar freaking roadways.
No, but there is a story about those, though.
I know.
We have been talking for a while about how roads could be a lot more functional. Well,
yeah, they could be more helpful to the overall ecosystem instead of just being these heat sinks for making it easy to drive back and forth.
And believe me, we believe in roads. We have to repave our road up to our house in Boulder Creek, and it's going to cost us a fortune.
Oh my God. It's cost somewhere between $500 and $700 a linear foot to pave a road these days.
Yes. And
crazy.
So we're thinking about that now, but the interesting thing is that there might be a better future in roads than just tar and asphalt.
Mm-hmm.
And one of those that we had spoken about several times in the past have been roadways.
It was our favorite Kickstarter a couple years ago.
Yeah, that's true.
Just because they had such a fun video to pitch it. Does everybody remember solar frickin' roadways?
Well, if you don't, just Google that. You'll find...
But the concept was to turn these gravel heat sink paths into solar power collectors. And then you could have everything from extra power for the future electric vehicle economy to light shows on the road.
So the town of Caine, a city in Normandy, decided to try it out. Several years ago, they built a solar roadway.
In France.
Normandy, France. And it's kind of surprising because it's a city that only gets like 44 days of strong sunshine a year.
Yeah,
so what were they thinking?
It's possible that the people who wanted to make sure that it failed picked this location.
You think
it's possible?
Conspiracy? The trial road was meant to produce about 150,000 kilowatts a year. And that would be enough power to provide light for about 5,000 people every day.
Wow, so a small town should be able to get enough electrical power just from their roads if everything's working.
Yeah, and this was a kilometer-long road. It wasn't that big.
Only one kilometer?
0.6 tenths of a mile.
So that really bodes well in terms of potential.
Instead, it was making just under 80,000 kilowatts here instead of 150,000 after the first year. And then half of that, down to 40,000,
After the second year?
By July of 2019.
Huh. Why?
Because they were broken
one
by...
One is they didn't have enough sunshine for well, the were, estimate, yeah. so that's one problem.
And they were broken by thunderstorms. Apparently lightning was attracted to the roads.
I thought they were broken by trucks.
That too.
Yeah, they didn't have good routes for vehicles that were too heavy for the roads.
And the engineers didn't take into account the effects of leaves, which can cause damage and limit the amount of electricity from the panels.
Yeah, it definitely gets in the way of your solar collection.
Never mind the tractors, because it's out in the countryside. The tractors were a problem too.
Mm-hmm.
So it was not mature enough technology to really prove to be viable.
Well, it did show how many things could go wrong.
Yes. It was good to actually try it.
Sure.
I thought, make roads more useful. After all, we have so many roads covering the earth that...
Yeah. Well, and just like solar cars are not for everyone in every situation, and yet there are a whole bunch of situations that they are ideal for.
Yeah.
So it's really about thinking it through and coming up with pragmatic, appropriate solutions.
What we need is the equivalent of Ice Nine for the road systems.
What's that?
Ice Nine?
Yeah.
Kurt Vonnegut? No?
Enlighten me.
Ice Nine was a mysterious substance that when added to water would cause it to freeze at room temperature.
Oh, God.
Okay. Now imagine that.
Sounds like a hazard.
I was thinking more along the lines that you'd have this mysterious substance you could add to roads. And they all connect to each other, right? If it could make the roads... regenerate. In other words, maybe make them so that they become alive, then they would repair themselves automatically because living things automatically repair themselves. And then we'd have a living road network. Of course, you'd have to feed them, but I haven't thought it through that far yet. I'm still working on the idea.
Well, once they become sentient, they might not make such good roads anymore.
They might not want to be walked on or driven on.
Yeah, sort of like a horse that doesn't want to be saddled.
Anyway, well, we probably will never know. So let's move on to the next topic.
Next.
SpaceX and Amazon are having a rival that have appeared on the scene.
You know, you're going to have to tell us about that after the break because you only have about 30 seconds before the break.
Okay, let's use that time then to thank our guest host that took up the slack for us over the last 3 weeks.
Yes, Michael Harrison did such a great job. Yeah. And then Vern. And then last week was Joe Jordan. All those guys doing their best to pinch hit while Dr. Future was on vacation.
I'm so glad everyone's got great ideas for the future.
Yeah.
Really great that...
A lot to look forward to.
Bring that out in our fellow compatriots, colleagues, and media. So, after the break, SpaceX Amazon rival. What does this mean?
Dr. Future and Mrs. Future are back. See you after the break.
Okay, welcome back to the futures. Now, as you probably know, both Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos are very involved with space explorations. And one of the ways in which they're planning to both expand it and pay for a lot of their billion-dollar projects is to put into space a satellite-based internet infrastructure.
Right.
And that means that we have thousands of satellites in low Earth orbit that basically blanket the planet.
That's blanet. That's kind of a nice new word for that. Okay.
Blanet the planet?
Yeah, we're going to blanet the planet.
And this would give everyone access to high-speed internet without having to go through local ISPs like
Except
Comcast
there's a latency with all that, but it'd be better than nothing.
No, low Earth orbit is not so bad. If it's geocentric orbit, it's a different story because it's going to go 22,500 miles up. But for low Earth orbit, it's only a couple hundred miles up.
Oh.
So it's pretty fast for light to do that.
Okay.
And we have more delay in fiber optic cables.
Right.
On the planet.
So if we get enough satellites up there for a really effective mesh network, then we could all have fast internet all the time.
That's right. That's right.
Unlike now, where we have occasional fast internet and mostly very slow, occluded internet.
Right, right. So this company is called OneWeb. They are a small rival to the two tech giants with their own internet infrastructure company headquartered in the UK. And they've been making incredible strides in this field. This last month, they've announced its six satellites in orbit had acquired priority rights in some key frequency bands, the Ku and the Ka band spectrum. Mm-hmm. And those are radio frequencies that they utilize for communicating to them. And Ku bands are, for those technically oriented, are 12 to 18 gigahertz, and Ka band is 26 to 40 gigahertz. These are important for broadband because basically, the higher the frequency, the more bandwidth the system can provide you.
Huh.
They were granted rights to those spectrums after their satellites, after OneWeb satellites functioned successfully at those designated frequencies for 90 days.
I see. So they got there first.
Yeah. And spectrum is a scarce resource. So them getting access to those frequency bands is really important.
Hmm. And do you know, how does that fit together with the 5G frequency band?
It's totally different. Uh-huh. We'll do another story on 5G is terrestrial frequencies.
Uh-huh.
Actually, Ku bands and these can penetrate buildings way better, and we've been using them for a long time. Mm-hmm. Satellite television uses Ku band frequencies now,
uh-huh.
for example.
Okay.
For the remainder of 2019, OneWeb plans to launch 30 satellites a month with a goal of 1,980 satellites in low Earth orbit to provide full coverage of the planet by 2021.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So they're the first ones out the gate with that. SpaceX's competing project is called Starlink. And their plans are to build a much larger constellation of about 10,000 satellites.
Mm-hmm.
So far, they've launched fewer than 100.
Mm-hmm.
They sent up 60 in one heavy load launch last May, but 10 of those have been decommissioned for unknown reasons.
Oh, they didn't quite work
yes.
out, huh?
Well, it's 10 out of 60.
Right. Well, we watched some of those deploy, and it was pretty impressive.
Cool. It's like little beads.
Right, little beads, little necklace full of satellites going
yeah.
out and then getting to their orbit and then dropping off the train.
Yes. Amazon's satellite project is at an even earlier stage.
Mm-hmm.
They hired the SpaceX's former head of satellites and several members of that team to start what they call Project Kuiper.
Mm-hmm. Kuiper, huh? We're going to have as many satellites as the Kuiper Belt?
As far as I know, they haven't launched any yet, but they will soon.
Yeah. Now, Amazon is all deep secret research until they come forward with a ready-to-go program.
Yeah. So if you look at the whole spectrum, SpaceX and Blue Origin, Bezos' company,
mm-hmm.
are much wider spectrum because they're doing many other projects in space as well.
Mm-hmm.
OneWeb is specifically focusing on this venture for providing a terrestrial internet
right.
from low Earth orbit. So.
Right. Yeah. SpaceX is doing rockets
yeah.
and rocket launches and payloads to space stations
and
research to get to Mars.
Right.
And what about the moon?
And Jeff Bezos.
Training crews. And
it's creating floating civilization in space.
this is just kind of his back pocket hobby while he's running the world's biggest transaction network.
Yeah, because someone's going to pay for this, eh?
Uh-huh, right.
You know? Yeah. So Amazon might as well. Tesla might as well.
Uh-huh.
But, of course, you see, Tesla doesn't pay enough money to do this properly, so you need some other big money generators like Global Internet's company.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. all these companies are hoping that this will be the little revenue generator that will allow them to continue with their vast space plans.
Right. Yeah. When you're in business, you got to have more coming in than going out. When you got more coming in than going out, then you can spend it on going to Mars.
That's all right. That's all right. And speaking of that, Mr. Mars himself, Elon,
mm-hmm.
got a couple stories. One is involving the SpaceX Roadster.
Oh, I love the SpaceX Roadster
Starman. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Richard Cray, for this link. It's out there. Starman and his Tesla Roadster have been in space for a year now. They completed their first orbit around the sun, taking 557 days since they launched.
Mm-hmm.
762 million miles.
Mm-hmm.
That exceeds the 36,000-mile warranty.
Yeah, no, they're never going to be able to get free maintenance on that car.
No, it's exceeded
but
the
even
original
though it's a Tesla, doesn't
warranty.
Need,
it doesn't 21,000 times.
And yet, it's so far away, and yet it's not going to be back on Earth for another, what, couple of years?
2020, November 5th, 2020. Mm-hmm. A day in which you'll be able to see Starman once again.
Oh, boy.
Yes.
Great.
It'll get much closer to Mars before then.
Oh, it's going to go to Mars first. Oh, I didn't realize that.
So on October 7th of that year. Mm-hmm. After that, it'll be quite lonely for Starman. They probably won't come back to Earth until 2047. Uh-huh. As you can tell, it's kind of an elliptical orbit.
Good to know. Good to know.
Yes, of course, we might go out there and pick it up and put it in a space museum on Mars before that. Anyway, we got a caller, Mrs. Future?
We do. Right. Regular caller. We've got Nick in Royal Oaks. Hi, Nick.
Hey,
how
Nick.
You doing?
What was that spacecraft going around the sun going to do for us?
Oh, well, it's the first car in space.
Yeah, the Starman.
Oh, the car.
Yeah, yeah, the Tesla.
It's
going
to come back.
Yeah, it's
going to get close.
Back around.
It's, you know, coming around.
It's been in orbit.
It's been in orbit.
An
it's going around
orbit.
The sun, and it's heading to Mars.
Yes.
They say it's going to decroak quickly.
Well, he's cloak. Still doing it. Fortunately, he doesn't have to breathe air, so he's...
Maybe that optical paint. Yeah, I was wondering. We know we're sending so many things to outer space.
Yes.
Outer space is welcoming us so well.
Yeah.
That, can you imagine it wanting to come visit us?
Well, we're a tiny speck, a dot in an infinite sea of stuff in space, so it's hard to say if anyone even knows about us.
Well, should we be eating up our atmosphere, shooting up to space?
Well, I think it's a good idea to see where we are in the universe. I mean, it's kind of important to see what's going on a bigger scale, don't you think?
Yeah, and I think there's some good science about what our atmosphere can and can't take. And actually, there was a presentation a few years ago by Musk showing that it would be less polluting to have rockets replace airplanes and go up to space and wait for the Earth to rotate beneath them and then land, and that would actually create less pollution than the current airplane model.
Well, I guess they perform in outer space, so they do without oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct, but they're adding something to burn oxygen itself. So I don't know what they're adding when they're taking off.
We did do a story a few months back on green rocket fuel. A lot of the rocket fuel is pretty toxic stuff right now, but they're working on it.
Yeah, I guess it's a pull and a push. Like a bottle rocket? It pulls instead of pulls.
Yeah, that's it. It's a giant bottle rocket.
That
that's how they do it. Same basic principle. Yeah, it's very Newtonian. It works, though. You know, that's the thing.
I hope you share some of your ventures, and it doesn't shock us as much as the last one that came from Notre Dame.
You mean in France last year, yeah. Yeah.
Well, you were in Canada?
We were in Quebec. We were up in the Laurentian Mountains and in a place near Montreal called DDO, otherwise affectionately known as Dollard des Armeaux.
Did you go near the... That's not on the western coast?
No, it's north of New York. It's about 350 miles north of New York City. It's kind of like the distance between Los Angeles and San Francisco. It's pretty close, and there's an interstate that goes all the way down to New York.
They're completely in fall now?
No, it was beautifully warm. We're in lakes, 76 degrees in the lakes, and beautiful skies. And
a little cooler than it is here,
thunderstorms.
A little more rain.
I love seeing a thunderstorm. It was really, really nice to do that. And wonderful friends and family. Hi, Mom.
and
we got to go to a break right now, Nick.
We're finding it everywhere now. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling, Nick.
All right. Bye.
All right, Gregory asked, the Tesla space car's warranty ran out after how many miles? 762 million miles, which exceeded its original 36,000, 21,000. That's right, 21,000 times. So they're going to have to come with new warranties for spaceships, you know. I mean, this miles just doesn't cut it up there.
Once you get to space, there's all warranties.
What do we
off.
Need, parsecs? We'll have to check that with Alexa here.
BRB.
All right, we'll be back. I was flying, yeah, running down. Hey, welcome back to the show. I had to go get our friendly Alexa from the car trunk here.
Dr. Future is out of breath. He's been running.
Yeah. I was saying, if you needed to get a warranty for your spaceship, how long should it be good for? Now, we have 36,000 miles for a car.
That's a really good question. We should call up some of these rocket companies and ask them how long their warranties are
maybe,
good for.
I was thinking a parsec, but how big is a parsec versus maybe an AU?
You want me to Google that? Ask Alexa. There you go. Right here.
Alexa. Echo.
Aha. See? Echo and Alexa. They look alike, but they're not.
How long is a parsec?
One parsec is 19.17 trillion miles.
That might be a little far. Echo, how long is an AU?
One astronomical unit is 93 million miles.
Yeah, that's more like it.
Half.
That's going around. That's to the distance between the Earth and the Sun. So if you go around. So maybe if you have
a warranty
for...
You should get an AU policy?
12 AUs.
12 AUs.
I think that'd be a good start.
Okay, good for 3 years. London. We have a suggestion for you.
Yeah, three years or 12 AUs, whichever comes first for your interplanetary spaceship. Okay, Virgin Galactic has just opened the doors of the world's first commercial space terminal. Do you hear about that?
Only from you. Tell me more.
It's a very interesting place. It's down in southern New Mexico, and it's the spaceport that was built about almost 10 years ago now, and it's been kind of empty. They thought the space industry would be much more thriving by now, I would think.
Really? Well, I guess so, because Burt Rutan, working for Virgin Galactic, won the X Prize when? 2004?
2004, yeah. It's been a while. Mm-hmm. So the facility has been waiting to be utilized, and now it looks like Virgin Galactic's moving in. They're getting ready for their space tourism business. Richard Branson's one of the other billionaires involved in this little space venture world. And it looks really nice. It looks like a really modern airport kind of structure.
It looks like a great view of the ocean. Is it right on the water?
No. It's New Mexico. It's a view of the... It's practically the view of Mexico.
Oh, it's desert. Okay.
Yeah. You know, watch the immigrants come through as you fly up for your $250,000 flight.
Got it.
To low Earth orbit for 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's 670,000 square feet. It sits on 18,000 acres. It's on state trust lands in New Mexico. It will become the departure site for all future commercial astronauts that sign up on Virgin Galactic space flights.
Hmm.
Kind of interesting looking space, and I'm glad it's finally being utilized.
Yeah, it looks like a pretty comfy airport. Nice view.
Yeah, real nice.
All right, so you can travel to space the same way you might travel for a long summer holiday.
And while you're waiting, you can party in the Gala Lounge on the first floor, and the second floor is called Cirrus. The restaurant has a planet theme, embodying the idea of departure and return as part of the purpose of each person's journey as they travel up and back.
Well, I'll tell you, until they start getting $250,000 per seat for their trips up to space, they're probably going to have to use it as a movie set. It looks really nice for airports for sci-fi movies.
That's right. It could always be used as a movie set. Cirrus, the second floor, has a theme of light, air, and flight. And they call that the beating heart of spaceflight operations. And that's where mission control lives and the mission briefing room. And that's where you go to find out about your mission before you go up. They have the pilot corps and all the other flight operations are up on the second floor.
Oh, boy. It's really nice architecture.
I don't see any baggage claims area, though.
Well, you have to keep your baggage weight down because it costs $1 million a kilo or something, you know.
Okay, now what about the spaceship hangars?
Kilograms,
yeah. Uh-huh. The spaceship hangars will be housed in what they call the Gateway Space Hangar.
Mm-hmm.
And it has the Virgin's first ship in there. And it's large, too. It's a large hangar.
It was designed in the 60s. You know, it looks like one of these Gaudi pancake house type, you know, flowing roofs.
Well, it's big enough to house two aircraft carriers.
Wow.
It's really big. You got to keep the spaceships from being destroyed by the elements, eh?
Uh-huh. Designed by Foster Plus Partners.
Yes. That's interesting. That's interestingengineering.com.
Very pretty building. I'm glad they're opening it up. great. Yeah.
Not far from Roswell either.
Oh. Well, I guess you can visit on the way out. Yeah. You can go to Roswell on your way to your outer space adventure. That sounds like a theme vacation right there.
It could be your story, your narrative of investigating off-planet operations in New Mexico.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. NASA has confirmed its mission to discover if Jupiter's moon Europa can support life.
Oh, yeah, they're going to go check it out?
Yes. Scientists have long suspected that Europa could house life. It's one of those moons that has a very thick crust of ice, a mile thick, I believe. Mm-hmm. And underneath that, they believe there's a liquid ocean.
Hmm.
And the liquid ocean could contain some kind of primitive microbial life.
Yeah, or it could just be a good place to park your submarine once you fly it there.
Yeah, that was some of the original ideas, that they thought that we would send a craft there that would go into orbit and then hit the planet with a very powerful beam to melt some of the ice.
Sure, right. Some kind of a laser welder that
could
laser
from space.
Create a little manhole through the ice. Okay.
That was one idea. Another one was to use a radioactive source on overload.
Oh, another. Nuke Europa. Human beings,
make enough heat
go nuke the universe.
To go through a mile
Let's
of
nuke
ice.
Every habitable
look,
place in our solar system.
Look,
huh?
I'm not saying we should do it. It's one of the things that would work.
You know, us monkeys cannot be trusted off the planet.
The problem
You're
with
convincing
the
me.
Nuke element is. That it might contaminate whatever life is underneath it or radiate it.
Oh, good concern. Yeah, now is the time to think about it before we plan the mission.
I'm thinking about it. Believe me, this is future, but please don't negate the fact that nuclear heat could melt through a mile of ice on Europa. It's certainly possible.
Well, they're using what you think of as like safe nukes to propel certain craft in space already. They're small. Aren't there a couple of rovers on Mars that have some kind of a
NASA
nuclear heater?
Well, NASA does have a standard small little nuclear generator, RNGs.
Right,
that
right.
work really well and have been being used for like
Right. And they're
the
not
70s.
They're not bomb size,
no.
right?
No, they're energy sources.
They're real energy sources.
As a matter of fact, one of the rovers on the Mars has one right now.
Mm-hmm. Right. So if we had one of those little heat generator nukes that's on, say, something the size of a skateboard, it could go there and just melt a surface and just keep going until it had cleared an entire mile.
It would freeze over before it made the next round, Mrs. Future. You need a very powerful space laser aimed at the planet to melt through the ice. And then once you melt through it, that's when you insert your submarine.
Mm. You know, Europa might have something to say about this plan. You know?
Well, then you bring a shaman along to talk to the planet to make sure things are copacetic with it.
How would you like to get a little laser hole drilled in your head?
I wouldn't. Yeah, that's why I say we'll bring the shamans. You know, no problem. We can just need a whole team here. The Earth contact team will handle that. Actually, they're used to contacting the Earth, not the other planets, so they might have to bring in some colleagues.
Uh-huh.
But there are beings that talk to planets. Uh-huh. Stuff like that. You just have to have them in the mix. If you
really
are concerned
about it. We need a planet whisperer. Do you think
planet
Europa
whisperer,
thinks it's a planet? Because
I don't know. I think it's probably
a satellite of Jupiter.
If you buy into the narrative that it's all alive, then it was going to have some kind of personality or identity. Certainly the ancient Greek and Roman civilizations were into creating characters.
Well, but the thing is planets go around the sun, whereas satellites go around planets.
Yes, so it'd be smaller than a planet.
You think Europa knows that it's a satellite, not a planet?
Oh, it probably does. Probably, yeah. It actually gets the heat from the planet because the planet is so close. It causes the rocks to move.
Oh, really?
The gravitational.
So Jupiter's actually reflecting
heat. Huge gravity is actually
toward Europa.
Not heat. It's more causing the rocks to rub against each other, which is generating heat. You know, it's like moving
it's
the
gravity.
Rocks in the planet.
The gravity
it's a strong
is
gravity.
Doing
it's
the work.
A huge planet.
Interesting.
And that's one of the sources of heat, which why we think that maybe that ocean might actually harvest or have some kind of life because of that heat and the water.
Yes. Well, can you just imagine if you were living underneath a crystal roof, if you could look up, if it was lit if it was on Earth, if it was this close to the sun and you looked up through it, it would be like looking up through a glacier. It would probably be very pretty. The colors would be kind of blue ice.
Yeah,
wouldn't
enough to let light through, but I think
I don't think there's that much light out there. Not
probably not, no.
Yeah.
No, but it's a beautiful image, Mrs. Future. I like that. We could do a very nice lighting effects.
Yeah, bring your own light show. Project it up on the ice roof of Europa.
What other life forms down there? You don't want to interfere with their life cycle by introducing something weird like light.
Not me.
Yeah, but, you know, maybe they might like it.
I think they might.
We need the Planet Whisperer to help us with that. Hey, welcome back to the show. Richard, yeah, thanks for the comment. Richard Cray.
That was Echo saying thanks.
And Echo, know your bounds.
I don't know that one.
Yeah, I'm sure you don't. No bounds.
Well, we all start out free and, you know, then reality confronts us and then we figure out how free we really are.
Yes, and I say in order to guarantee our freedom, we've got to hold our AIs close.
Okay.
It's right next to the mic here.
All right. Friend or enema?
Yeah. Mm. We'll see. There's a horror movie on Netflix about Europa. Yeah, I heard about that. I don't know if it was a horror movie.
Send us the name. We'll check it out.
Could you check that, Richard, what the name of that Europa film was? But it had to do with some critters, right, that they found there that didn't like us very much. Okay. Yeah, I guess they could qualify as a horror film. So, horror or Nirvana? Musk proposes to launch a nuclear strike on Mars. Nuclear strike?
Nuclear strike. We've talked about this before. It has to do with the idea that to release the oxygen into the atmosphere, a nuclear reaction at the poles would set off a chain reaction that would free it up.
And put CO2 in the atmosphere. Yeah, it's plausible. But again, what are the other consequences? You know, you got to look at the whole ecosystem, just one reaction.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you want to make Mars friendly to our species, that totally makes sense to think that way. But
again, who is getting the vote of the planet?
Well, does the planet really care?
Does the planet have the ability to vote?
As I was talking before, we need to have some, where science meets shamanism, some shamans that know how to talk to planets.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there are a few that claim they can do that, and you find the real ones and take it from there.
Dial it up. Hey, Mars, how do you feel about us nuking your North Pole?
Yeah.
Would you like to join the assembly of oxygen available planets?
Yeah. Are you making fun of this idea?
Uh-huh.
So you don't think it's possible?
I didn't say that. I'm just making fun of it.
Okay. All right. Easy enough.
Possible does not mean serious.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, I'm serious about this.
I can tell.
I do think you need the right team in order to explore space properly. And if you start to embrace the idea that it's a living universe, then these things become more realistic. And
Nick Herbert's idea of seducing nature, you would be asking Mars what it would like us to do once we get there, instead of concocting ideas about nuking it.
Mrs. Future, I would say you're probably right if we were talking about Earth, but this is Mars, all right?
This is our solar neighbor. How different can it be?
This is the war planet.
Ah, that's a story. We just say that because it's red.
Yeah. Okay. Whatever you say. I'm saying that the ancients probably tuned into some of the energetics of this planet, and this is something to be conscious of. Not being a psychic in that sense myself, but having a respect for that arena, I would say that Mars is something to be cautious of, at least until we have deeper information.
Well, I have to agree with that. Always good to be cautious
H.G. Wells.
Visiting new planets.
Yeah, that was one of our first big aliens, Martians.
In the imagination.
And science fiction precedes reality very often. So then there was Stranger in a Strange Land, of course, which gave Martians a whole nother twist.
Oh, yeah. Then they seemed like New Age love beings
Right? Yeah, which was kind of
like hot
kind of
tubs and grokking each other, and
that's right. It was kind of a,
putting E in the water system so everybody could have a fun time. And
they would have a big pot in front of their church where, if you needed money, you would take it, and if you wanted to leave some, you would.
There you go.
So it was a little different thinking.
And that was Mars.
Yeah, that was a Martian. That was somebody who was raised by Martians.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So it created it. It was more interesting in that sense because then we could.
He's one of ours, but he was raised by them.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I guess you could say a kind of a hybrid. Mm-hmm. Hey, really worth reading. If you never read Stranger in a Strange Land, it's the most unusual twist on science fiction. And interesting, I don't think Robert Heinlein, who lived in this area, actually wrote another book like that. Mm-hmm. It seemed to stand out in his books as being more about the peace and love, the universe is one generation, as opposed to the status quo.
Yeah. Well, there was an era that was responding to the Vietnam War and the growing up in the duck and cover generation after the nuclear bomb explosion. There was a whole generation of people who felt like we needed to embrace peace and we needed to embrace each other.
Speaking of which, I saw the new Netflix PBS documentary on Woodstock. It showed a lot of behind the scenes stuff and what was going on away from the main music stage and lots of aerials.
Uh-huh.
I thought it told the story very beautifully.
Oh, cool. You had a lot of aerial footage of Woodstock. That must have been quite
interesting. Yeah, and Wavy Gravy as a cop. You know, he was supposed to, you know, Wavy Gravy and the hog farm were supposed to be the cops.
And
that's what they did, too. And they did it in a very different way than
we police things. We could benefit from the humanity of our police force. They get such a bad rap, but they have such a hard job. And to humanize them and take somebody like Wavy Gravy, who's a clown, right, who is helping to enforce order, is probably a good idea. There are all kinds of humans who become cops.
Yeah. He was asking people to do things. Please. The please force. That's what they call themselves, yeah. Please move to the center of the road. Thank you. It's a new documentary on Netflix on Woodstock. So I recommend that. And let's see, what other news we want to save in our last 5 minutes before we bring on Gregory Panos, who is going to give us a more detailed download on what happened at SIGGRAPH this year.
Ooh, state of the art in animation, computer graphics, VR development.
And all kinds of stuff that
cinematic realities,
the media world. Deep fakes.
How far do we see on a screen?
Is everything just made up now?
Well, isn't everything just made up always?
Well, save that for the second hour. So, to finish on the story on the nuclear strike on Mars, he's having T-shirts made.
Elon?
Nuke Mars.
Mars. I know I got one.
Did you? Oh, Mrs. Future.
I heard about it from another friend.
Nuke Mars T-shirt?
I did. I ordered it this morning.
Oh, did you order one for me, too?
I did.
You did?
I was going to surprise you, but I got one for you, too. I figure we should support Elon's efforts. Let's get a T-shirt.
We have links, by the way, to all these stories at drfutureshow.com/links. You'll be able to go in more depth and check things out, look at some of the pictures, which I think is really cool.
Okay. Ooh, volumetric video.
Yes, that's one of the cool things that you're going to not see in the second hour.
You'll hear about it.
Yeah, we are making a version of Dr. Future Show where you will be able to see it very soon. And that's one of our projects.
Right. Dr. Future is taking some of our most interesting shows and making them visual. So you're going to be seeing some more fun things in the future if you're a close friend.
The radio show sort of drives the narrative, but the visuals can enhance it.
That's right.
So it's another way of listening.
And we started out as Blendo artists. We started out as people who were doing
with visuals.
Beautiful color light shows to put together with music performances. Radio lends itself very well to that.
Yes, it does. And it's really interesting to do it from a news point of view because we can pull fresh images and movies every week from all the stories that we're covering. And actually, you can see what we're talking about.
Hey, speaking of seeing what we're talking about,
yeah.
We just got a note. It's called Europa Report on Netflix.
Oh,
the horror
Europa
movie
Report.
About Europa.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Not necessarily recommending it. I've tried starting it a couple of times now that I think about it.
Oh, really?
And I haven't gotten too far.
Why? It's too scary?
Well, no, it's just that if it's a predictable horror movie, it puts me to sleep.
Oh,
right? It
I
doesn't
know what you
stimulate
mean.
Me.
Horror
I
mean, I, is not
you know
my
what's
genre
happen,
either.
Ho-hum.
Ho-hum, everyone will die, and it'll be scary every single time we lose the next non-survivor.
But perhaps they're selling the movie a little short. We haven't actually seen it, so I should really
We're just selling horror a little short because it's such a formula.
Yeah, formulaic thinking just gets boring after a while.
Yeah. You know, people who are afraid of dolls because they might get killed in a movie. It just doesn't really work for me.
Okay, Ripples in Space-Time. We'll save that for some future time. We're going to go to Seagraph in the next hour. Okay?
Okay, folks. Well, we are in the world of tomorrow.
Yes.
We're back.
We're back with Greg Panos and possibly Richard Craig. We'll see.
Okay. This is the Dr. Future Show on KSCO Santa Cruz.
Hey, Norm. My brother showed up. All right.